So you just finished a procedure about 20, 30 minutes ago.
Yes.
And how are you feeling?
I feel fine. Within the 5 minutes after the procedure, I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, the cramps were a 5. I know everybody is different, but here I am 20 minutes later, and I am totally fine. I feel almost nothing. I don't even cramp during my period, but these are like first day minor cramps. And the procedure was over before I knew it. Shanta talked me through it and distracted me. It wasn't unpainful, but it was absolutely tolerable, and totally, it was the right thing to do.
Great. So I wanted particularly to interview you for a couple of reasons. One is your age, and you're in your mid-40s.
I'm 46. I'll be 47 in November.
And it's actually not uncommon for me to see women in their 40s.
Which
it's quite common.
Boggles the mind, yes.
And you're somebody who even had some fertility treatments at some point.
I didn't have fertility treatments, but I was trying to have a baby naturally for 2 years, and we could not get pregnant, and we just kind of stopped being really intense about it. And then I did get pregnant about 9 months later, and I had a miscarriage at 12 weeks. I was 43 at that time. And I think at the time, you know, after we stopped trying really hard and thinking about it, you know, it's one of those classic things. You stop trying or you stop thinking about it and you get pregnant, and because you're relaxed and you're not concentrating on it constantly. And at the time, I'd kind of put a wall down where I was like, I don't want to be pregnant at 44. So if I'm not pregnant by the time on February of my 43rd year, I'm not going to do it. And, you know, and there I was, this September of my 43rd year. Pregnant. We were really happy, and I was just about to go through all of the testing. You know, I was, it was 11 weeks. I think I was going to do 12-week test at 12 weeks, and I started spotting one day, and I had a miscarriage at home. In consultation with my midwife over the phone, and I did not do an aspiration after. I'm glad I did it at home. I'm not squeamish, so I was sort of interested just to sort of go through the process.
Mm-hmm.
But it was intense. And I think, you know, I would not want to do it again at home. So it ended at that point. We were just like, you know, maybe this isn't the time. I did a progesterone test after, uh-huh, like 3 months later. And my progesterone was actually like, it wasn't low. It was like in the 12 to 13 range. So it wasn't like terribly low, but, you know, just between the idea of doing treatments or giving myself shots, like, we, you know, it was just too much by that point. And I was, you know, ready to go. I'd stayed home for almost 5 years to take care of my son, and it was time to go back to work. And, you know, we just kind of made the decision. So having this happen now was just kind of like, no, you know, I can't, you know, it'd be nice 4 years ago, but I can't. I just can't back up and stop work, you know, risk work stuff again. And so, yeah. I mean, it wasn't a difficult decision to make this. I mean, these are never, that's ridiculous to say. These are never easy decisions, but learning about this process and knowing I could do it very early definitely takes some of the emotionality out of it, and was a godsend. It was the right thing to do, and I'm so grateful, you know. Having been an abortion advocate in college and taken women to clinics and seen this sort of firsthand, the bad part of it, the worst part of it, having an experience like this is amazing and should be a much more widely promoted option for women.
Your son is now 9.
Yes.
Do you want to just say some of the differences you're feeling from 3 years ago to now, as far as making the decision?
Yeah, I think, you know, with a 9-year-old too, you know, I think having a 10-year difference between kids was one of the first things that came to my mind. I mean, even though I was fairly sure I just didn't want to have a kid at this point, having just gotten resettled into work habits and moved recently and done all these kind of big life decisions, the second thing that occurred to me was having a 10-year difference between children. My mother was older when she had me. I'm 46, about to turn 47. My mother is 88, and I'm taking care of her now, and she's in an Alzheimer's home. Like, I already feel like I'm taking care of two children between her and my son, and entering that into the picture is not an option. I mean, I have a responsibility to her now, and Yeah, I think that is probably the big difference. My mother wasn't as sick when I got pregnant at 43, and I think we would have been able to manage it in a different way. But now I don't feel like I could do all of that anymore. I mean, I already don't feel, you know, with a 9-year-old and work and, you know, what's happening in the world, like, you already don't feel like you can manage everything in New York City. And 5 years ago, it would have been nice to have a baby, but now it's not the time.
How were the physical aspects of this in weighing into your decision? I think, in my experience, things really start to change in your 40s. I told you I had a baby at 40, and the difference between having a baby at 40 and 26 for me was night and day.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I have an older friend who, many years ago, had gotten pregnant at 40, and she was a little nervous about it, but excited. And after she had her daughter, she was super pushy about me having a baby. She's like, do it now. I'm just like, I'm still figuring things out. I'm still traveling. I'm still doing all these things. I want to be careless and reckless. And she said something to me that at the time I just ignored, of course, but recognized now. And she said, you just won't have the stamina after a certain age. And, you know, I have a 9-year-old boy. And, like, I get it now. Like, the stamina thing is huge. And, I mean, I'm fairly fit. I don't exercise as much as I should. I probably drink too much wine. But I can deal. I can keep up. But I recognize there will be a day when I wouldn't be able to. And if there might be a small difference between having a boy or a girl. But, like, the idea of being 50 with a 3-year-old kid and what my son was like at 3... don't think I'd be able to do it. It's also a huge emotional commitment. As we get older and your parents get older and you're already taking care of a little kid, you know, like the emotional commitment too, it's like, does one have that much capacity, you know, to take care of all of those things? Those are big decisions. There is obviously an aspect of it being great to have a baby around, but it'll just be too hard.
You said before when we were talking that you used to be an abortion advocate, and years?
So I was in college in rural Pennsylvania in the mid-80s when Pennsylvania, as it still is, a deeply Republican, deeply conservative state, abortion laws have loosened up a tiny bit. I think they're kind of moving backward again in Pennsylvania, but at the time they were very restrictive. I went to a huge college. We had a women's health center that, by school standards or whatever laws, regulations, we were not allowed on campus in the Women's Health Center to give women a lot of information about terminating pregnancies. It was a crazy system. So a group of us, I started doing this in my first year there. I was 17 years old. And some women who had been in school longer than I had formed a sort of advocacy circle. They met in an off-campus house where some of them lived. And, you know, just by word of mouth and through women who worked at the health center, you know, who couldn't kind of speak on record, but passed word along to women who were seeking terminations, they got a hold of our phone numbers or they came by. We basically had, I mean, and not to be flip about it, but we sometimes called it the abortion caravan, where a few of us had cars and we would take women to New York to get terminations, because in Pennsylvania you needed parental consent before 18. It was 20 or 21 at some point, but I think at the time it was before 18. So we were taking 18-year-olds to New York to get abortions, and, you know, women who were past the restrictive age could get abortions up to 16 weeks in Pennsylvania at the time, in the mid-80s. And we would take them. There was a clinic in Harrisburg, which was about an hour and a half away, but it was kind of grisly and nobody wanted to go there. So we sometimes took women to Maryland, where it was a little bit looser. But yeah, it was a very formative experience for me. I did not have a termination in college, but I did in graduate school when I was in California, where the laws were pretty fast and loose compared to Pennsylvania. I had a 12-week abortion in California, a surgical abortion, which was in a clinic, but was actually not a terrible experience at all, in fact. And they were really good. It was a women-only staffed, and this was San Diego in 91. From what I saw compared to what I experienced with women who I escorted to clinics, the experience in San Diego was, you know, was stellar.
Did you actually go into the clinics with them?
Well, women were not allowed to have any kind of partners with them, female or male or friends or family. You had to go into the room alone, which was just horrifying to imagine an 18-year-old or 17-year-old doing it on her own. But we did escort them in. In Pennsylvania, especially the clinic in Harrisburg that we sometimes took women to, there were always protesters. So we kind of formed a chain and would escort women in. And that alone, I mean, just the trauma alone of entering the clinic in sort of such a state, you know, for them was, I was horrifying. No privacy whatsoever. And, you know, a large waiting room. You know, it felt like the DMV, you know. You know, mm-hmm. It's a huge waiting room. And sad women and angry women. And, you know, there was an air of desperation about it. And there's also that air of shame about it. I mean, I don't think anyone questions that, you know, there's been this insinuation that it's a shameful thing to do. Having talked to a lot of women, you know, on these long drives, women, it turns out, are frightened to take pregnancy tests when they miss a period because they can't even face the idea that they might be pregnant. Mm-hmm. So they put off taking a pregnancy test. And then in a state like Pennsylvania or Arkansas, where my sister works as a genetic counselor, you can't get an abortion past 20 weeks. It's so traumatic on every level. But no, I mean, to answer your question directly, you could not go into the procedure room. If they had gone under, you couldn't see them until they were awake. I mean, it was terrible. I mean, I'm glad to have done it, though. I mean, you know, in states where restrictions are still in place, women need that kind of support. I mean, even if the conditions of clinic culture don't change, the one thing that should change is that women should have an advocate in the room with them. I mean, that is of the utmost, you know, importance. I would say if anything could change, that should be sort of the first thing. And
what do you think now about having gone through this particular procedure and how simple it is compared to what you were seeing, and what do you make of that in a way, that it can be this simple and women are being put through?
Yeah, it's utterly shocking to me. I mean, I only learned about it myself three or four weeks ago, you know, when I first started thinking about this, and it's utterly shocking that it isn't performed more, it isn't written about, talked about, advocated for in a way that women are aware of, so they can kind of get on the bandwagon. I mean, I don't know if, you know, women who have had terminations are just kind of embarrassed to come out and speak out about it. I mean, you don't see that in advocacy culture or policy culture, really. I mean, lots of women come out and you know, who are pro-choice and want to change the system do come out and speak, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know what that cultural block is that women don't want to come out and help advocate for it. The shame of being pregnant when you don't want to be pregnant needs to be stripped away. It's not a huge deal. Women need to be encouraged to take pregnancy tests earlier or be more aware of their own bodies and cycles so they know they're pregnant earlier. They need options like this. There's just no other, you know, there's just nothing else to say. It's so black and white. It's so clear that this needs to be an option for people.
I mean, my vision would be that regular family doctors just...
You would do this. I mean, yeah, the fact that a gynecologist or your OB can't tell you about this or tell you it's an option
or practice it
is...
It's a two-minute procedure.
Outrageous. I mean, people go through much more invasive things in a doctor's office than this, and...
Have you? You've never had a colposcopy, but I think it's...
No, I haven't. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a good comparison.
Yeah.
I mean, a colposcopy actually is a little bit more painful because it's a sharp
tool.
unusual pain, whereas this is a few minutes of cramping. But for an early pregnancy, it's more complicated than getting a colposcopy.
Absolutely.
So that's been my challenge for the last 20 years I've been involved in this.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
But
so what is it about the medical community that resists?
In my opinion, has more to do with the way abortion was established in the 70s in these clinic settings.
Right.
So when I got exposed to this in 1995, I was in my residency, and there was an opportunity to train at a well-known clinic. Family doctors, for the first time ever, had the opportunity to see what was going on at clinic. I mean, I personally had an abortion at 18, but it's really the only medical procedure that you don't see in training because it's completely disconnected from the mainstream medical community.
And, I mean, everybody has babies. Like, how could it be divorced from...
Well, you see D&Cs operating room settings in hospitals, but nobody is really doing, at that time, it was really D&Cs. The pill didn't come out until 2000.
Right.
And then manual vacuum aspiration has been around since the 70s, but it was not part of mainstream medicine at all until around the same time in 2000 when there was a presentation made. Now, early abortion, I think 40% is being done with a pill, which I have many opinions about, because that's not an easy thing either. And there's
having had a miscarriage, I can't imagine that. Going through that, if you haven't gone through it before, is an easy thing.
The soft touch procedure or manual procedure is the definitely, as far as a miscarriage goes, is by far, I think, the most humane way to go through this.
Yeah.
But the pill is a very mixed experience, but at least 40% of early abortion now is being done by the pill, whereas they don't even count the number of manual procedures that are being done. And the trouble is that a lot of the clinics really just aren't invested in making the changes, because you can see this is a very different culture of doing a manual procedure. It's more like a pap test. It's very personal. We're talking during
it. It's a huge...
It's in a regular exam room, whereas the clinics are really staffed often by surgeons in an operating room. The culture of it is to put women to sleep, you know, to just do as many procedures as possible. Yeah. So a doctor will do 20 to 40 procedures in a day, whereas we're doing 10 at the most, and it's all very relaxed in the way that you just experienced. So it's a completely different way of providing services that's been done since the 70s,
so
and it's very hard to impact on it.
Exactly.
And our challenge has really been spreading the word about it in New York City.
Yeah.
Our patients are very, very passionate, like yourself, about having been through this experience. So mainly I've asked women to write reviews about their experience. But also these interviews have been sort of a new attempt to try to get the voices of women out.
Normalizing it.
To normalize it, exactly, to make this normal. There's still this culture that I think women feel ashamed because they think that they're supposed to be in some extreme situation to not have a baby.
Right.
But in fact, for 20 years, I've just seen normal women making normal decisions.
And making a decision for themselves. I mean, I think that that's something that the wider culture sometimes has a problem seeing, you know, is like, I'm back to work now. I have finally established like a system with my kid and my job and my home and my mom, you know, and it's finally done. And like, it's like, you know, not having a baby is right now at 47 is the right thing to do for me and for my health and my mental health, my son's health. It's like, I have a sister who's 5 years older than me. And I thought, you know, and I, growing up, I think we both felt 5 years. It's a big gap. I can't imagine having kids 10 years apart. It kind of boggles the mind. So,
It's a deeply personal decision. There's nothing, there's nobody else that
who
knows
can,
your particular situation that can say, you know your life, know what you want.
Exactly. And my sister is a genetic counselor, genetic researcher who became a genetic counselor, and she works at a big regional children's hospital in Little Rock, Arkansas. Maybe the most restrictive abortion laws in the country. And, you know, so she sees families come in, you know, with children who are going to be born with horrible things. You know, she's speaking to a culture down there that is far more conservative than New York or Pennsylvania or many other places. And there are just many conservative religious families who the idea of having a baby is not for them, or not having a baby is not, you know, they don't feel like it's their choice. This is, you know, and that's a huge issue she faces. It was a big difference from doing that kind of work in New York and going to a place like, I mean, part of the reason she went down there to do it was because she knew there was this need to try to, in extreme health issue cases, of normalizing the idea of terminating pregnancy instead of being a sap on state resources and family resources and emotional resources. You know, like, it did have to be put out there as an option instead of feeding the system. So she's had, you know, a similar kind of like cultural shift, just trying to make any kind of abortion, you know, normalize any kind of thing, let alone in somewhat advanced New York City, where we're talking about just moving the procedure forward to normalize it. I mean, she's kind of starting from zero. So
medicine and especially women's health has, of course, this history of not being able to make changes and
progress,
especially in making things more natural for women.
Better. Yeah.
And then on top of it, you add the stigma and politics and, like you're saying, the lack of advocacy and just outspokenness that we don't...
I mean, when we were doing this in college, and my sister did it as well, I mean, we were vilified. I mean, it was hard to do this work, you know. We had women who from, like, you know, the Christian groups on campus who would kind of pose as women who need abortions, come, you know, then the house would be found out. So we would have to find another place to meet. You know, it was really intense. And I will never forget that work. And I'm very glad I did it. And anything I could do to promote or normalize this procedure, I would be happy to do.
Well, I'm really happy to meet you. And
yeah,
thank you
thank
so
you.
Much
oh, thank
for
you.
Taking
and your
the
staff
time.
Is amazing. Thank you.